God said, I need somebody willing to get up before dawn, milk cows, work all day in the fields, milk cows again, eat supper, then go to town and stay past midnight at a meeting of the school board. So God made a farmer.
My administration will be focused on three very important words. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
Policeman must be a minister, a social worker, a diplomat, a tough guy, and a gentleman. And of course he'll have to be a genius because he'll have to feed a family on a policeman's salary.
From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first. We, the citizens of America, are now joined in a great national effort to rebuild our country and restore its promise for all of our people. Because today, we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another, or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people.
Hold on to your seats. Buckle up for safety. You are now entering another dimension with the Scott Adams Show.
And that's right. My name is Scott Adams. You're listening to the Scott Adams Show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. You know, I got to tell you, one of the smartest people I've seen ever come into a SCOTUS confirmation is Amy Coney Barrett. Wow, what a super intelligent woman she is. And it was just amazing to watch because they would come at her with one case after the next, looking for asking her about what precedents are and super precedents and whether Roe v. Wade is a super precedent, and she would ask the questions back, or she would make her points in such an articulate and illustrative way that it would make sense to the average Joe like me. In a sense that, she said, by the mere fact that you're asking me this question, she was almost like giving a teachable moment to the senators. By the mere fact that you're asking me this question about Roe v. Wade would imply by itself that this is not a super precedent. A super precedent is like Brown versus the Board of Education, where it's just indisputable, you know, that Black kids can go to integrated schools. Brown versus the Board of Education. That's like completely understood. There's no partisanship there. It's a consensus. It's a super consensus that makes it a super precedent. It's just on the books as being, you know, a guiding light, a guiding post, almost as if it's an amendment to the Constitution. But with Roe v. Wade, a lot of people think that was, a court ruling that does not serve as a super precedent, that there's flaws in the ruling. And she addressed also her issues that she took up with Roberts regarding Obamacare. And, you know, when they would ask her these cases, she would respond in a way that was just so easy to understand. And the reason why is because she's used to dealing with college kids at Notre Dame. And so when a professor is up there, they're going to get questions about different cases, different case studies, different examples. And she had great examples, you know, like the Fourth Amendment, for example. She was talking about that, and she was saying, well, you know, and she was explaining what an organic, a person of the law, how they look at the Constitution as, you know, a contextualist, How they look at the law as a as a dead document, as how they look at the Constitution as a dead document, and how they how the document can apply. And she said that the way that works is that you apply what they were intending or what they meant. So you have to figure out, and again, you can be of that same brand and yet still come up with a different conclusion, because it's your interpretation of what you think the founding fathers meant when they wrote down the Fourth Amendment. And she said, well, that, and there you are, you know, with cell phones, for example, as a search and seizure, you know, to what degree do you do that? But then she had a really good example of someone has perfect X-ray vision, and they can see through houses and invade your privacy. There would be, you know, you'd have to analyze that and figure out what the founding fathers would have done in a situation like that. And it was really refreshing. What wasn't refreshing was the nonsensical questions that you would get from really dumb Democrats on the Senate committee hearing. You know, there's very, very ignorant people, like perhaps the most ignorant, and I don't know, I have a lot, like, I think Cory Booker's really dumb, but certainly Mazie Hirono is really, really dumb. And she asked this stupid question here about whether or not a mother of seven, two adopted, who is such a quality person as Amy Coney Barrett, ever harassed anyone sexually in the office.
To ensure the fitness of nominees for a lifetime appointment to the federal bench or to any of the other positions for any of the committees on which they appear, I ask each nominee these two questions, and I will ask them of you. Since you became a legal adult, have you ever made unwanted requests for sexual favors or committed any verbal or physical harassment or assault of a sexual nature?
No, Senator Hirono.
Have you ever faced discipline or entered into a settlement related to this kind of conduct?
No, Senator.
Judge Barrett, do you think it is appropriate for justices to consider real-world impacts in their decision-making?
So there you have it. You know, what a waste of breath. What a waste of molecules that this Mazie Hirono, I can't even believe that she could actually be a senator of a state. And what are they drinking out in Hawaii that allows someone like Mazie Hirono, who can say, trust all women, in one breath when it comes to Kavanaugh, and step up, men, step it up, but yet support someone like Joe Biden, creepy Joe Biden that puts his hands all over women and children, and treat another respectable woman that way? And she uses the excuse that she's going to, you know, she asks this of all people. It's just insane. And, you know, the other part is, why wouldn't she ask Congress the same question? I think she would get a different answer, wouldn't she? You take ask Kamala Harris the same question, you know, and all her exploits with Willie Brown and how many people they stepped on. Which brings me to the next point. I was reading this, I was looking at this analysis in this poll in North Carolina, and almost with pride and glee, the liberal media is saying, you know, the incidents against Cal Cunningham in North Carolina, the running for the Senate seat against Tom Tillis. And you got to say, well, Tom Tillis is just not the most gregarious storyteller. You know, he just doesn't seem to be a great politician in terms of, you know, appeal. And that's a shame, because he's a Republican, and I'm sure he's a good guy. I don't know a lot about him, but his opponent is Kyle Cunningham, and Kyle Cunningham is up in the polls. And almost with joy, the liberal media is sort of like, You know, these negative stories aren't shifting the polls much in North Carolina. And I'm thinking to myself, what has happened to North Carolina to where somebody can cheat on their wife and with two children, not once but twice, while you're running on the advancing the narrative, running on the narrative that he supports vets and the military, while being a Democrat that wants to defund the military, and the guy whose wife he's using who works for him as a subordinate is a vet. You know, so not only is he cheating on his wife, but the wife that he's cheating on is cheating on a vet, a veteran, a Marine, or, you know, a military veteran. It's pretty nonsensical. It's pretty crazy. So, you know, it's a hypocrisy. And then you look at Kamala Harris, who's getting into an elevator, right? And she says she can't show up in person for this Senate committee hearing, even though the way they laid it out and the way they've cleaned it, you know, and it's good enough for Amy Coney Barrett to be there. It's good enough for a lot of other senators. But so many of these liberal senators are still trying to exploit COVID all the way up until the election day. Well, you know, the New York Times is now writing that, you know, things are actually looking, you know, thanks to warp speed. They don't thank Trump. They thank warp speed. Nobody knows, because nobody on the left-wing media has ever heard a positive story about Trump, they don't know that warp speed is Trump's speed. Warp speed is Trump's idea. But they credit warp speed in their newspaper, not Trump. Trump did a great job. No, not that. They credit warp speed, and then now, as predicted, the election infection is winding down. They're finding excuses, and they're already setting the stage for a post-election kumbaya moment with the COVID. Because you got this one story coming out where 85% of the people that have gotten sick have worn masks all the time or partially, part of the time. And they've done that. And then what else did they do? And so that says, well, masks don't work, right? I mean, if you're wearing a mask 80 full time or part of the time, and you're social distancing, and 85% of those people are getting sick from COVID, or 85% of the COVID patients have done all the right things, you got to say, well, masks don't work. And again, we've said it here a long time. The masks don't work because the virus is so much smaller than the fibers in the mask, and all the space that's open gaps surrounding the mask, you're going to get it in. In some cases, the mask could actually trap the bacteria just by having a physical barrier. And so if the virus gets in on the side of your mask, and not all masks are built the same. Maybe a really great mask, a really well-designed mask, could be more effective, but most people are sticking a piece of cloth across their face, and it's really not that high grade of a mask. And so you're either going to get sick or you're not. I mean, part of it is DNA dependent. What's your molecule makeup as to how you do it and how you get it? But they're already telling stories about how the mask may not be the best thing to do, because 85% of the people that are wearing the mask successfully are getting sick. So maybe let's not even worry about the mask. Maybe let's do the social distancing and don't shake hands so much. They're also finding out that the lockdowns don't work. Now the WHO, now the number I just quoted you, 85%, well, that was a CDC number. So CDC's Redfield said no to masks, then he said yes to masks, then he said the masks are the next best thing to sliced bread. He said that they're more important than a vaccine. And it was all about, what does a mask mean, right? A mask, you see a mask in these repressive societies where someone has to wear a hijab. If they don't have their costume on properly, they get beat with a cane or a stick in Middle Eastern countries. Wahhabism, they call it. And Sharia laws, and you must, you know, obey, and you must oblige, and you must comply, and you must do as you're told. And if you don't, we will send the Gestapo to your door and pull you out and drag you out of your house. Beto O'Rourke wants to do that with your guns. If Biden wins, Beto O'Rourke becomes his gun czar. And he promises to do just that. And with the masks, again, what cultures? You know, these secret societies wear masks. And I think that the masks are symbolic. And there's no doubt about it in my mind. And I thought it since the very beginning. And I've never deviated from it. And right now, I believe more than ever, with all the new information that I've gotten, that these masks were symbolic. And they replaced, just like the socialists want to replace God with government. And this Whitmer guy said this. I love this Whitmer. He's a sports analysis black guy. He's one of the most brilliant speakers. I mean, every time he speaks, I learn something. And this one, he said, you know, that the you have to replace put government in, you got to take God out. In order to put government in, you got to take the middle class out. Now, I've been saying on this show for a long time, you can't have socialism if you have a strong, vibrant, working middle class with independent thoughts that can't be told what to do and will not appreciate you being told how to raise their family. And so there's all of that. And so long as you have that, you have enough numbers to where they're pragmatic thinkers, they're common sense, they're not drinking the Kool-Aid, they care about the margins, they care about the decisions that the government makes that intrude in their lives. And they don't want people coming in and inspecting their homes or telling them they can't have a Second Amendment or telling them that their Fourth Amendment search and seizure doesn't mean anything, that they could be wiretapped or their house could be inspected or they could be told that a puddle in their backyard is a pond and they're in violation. They have to pay a fine. They have to pay a tax. They have to do all these nasty things or atrocious things. And it's all designed for targeting. You know, they target one group over another in order to make an example out of one group and get them to bow and obey. And the mask is not much different. We heard Lori Lightfoot in Chicago say, "We will come out and we will arrest you." And it's like, meanwhile, you got Antifa and Black Lives Matter attacking the police. And that's okay. And they're violating in social distance, and that's okay too, because protests of this nature are so important. But if you protest your Bill of Rights, if you protest that your Bill of Rights are being denied, they say, well, COVID's bigger than that. I have emergency powers. I can do anything I want. And then you go and protest because you're one of the voters and one of the fundraisers. Black Lives Matter is a fundraiser for Act Blue. Act Blue gives all their money to Joe Biden right now. And the NBA's in on it. The NFL's in on it. Shame on the corporations that sponsor these teams. Take notes and hold no, take prisoners. I mean, it's not fair. It's not fair that Washington, D.C. or New York City, the mayors there, can literally take your taxpayer, conservative taxpayer dollars and apply them to the paint and the crew that paints down Fifth Avenue and Pennsylvania Avenue. And it just so happens that those two avenues are in front of the two homes where the president of the United States lives. Coincidence? I think not. And you're not allowed to put a MAGA there. And if you wear a MAGA hat or a MAGA mask, You'll get clobbered over the head with a baseball bat or shot in the street, as we've seen in Denver and in Portland or Seattle, wherever that was, where the Antifa killed the Trump supporter. And we've seen shots fired in Boulder and in Colorado. And so what I'm saying is that this mask thing has been symbolic. It's been where, you know, if you're wearing a mask and you're wearing gloves and you can even put the goggles on and even put rubbers over your shoes and wear a spacesuit if you're really liberal, if you're really a libtard, you can do all that. And that says, well, the last thing I'd ever put on is a MAGA hat. And the first thing I would do is support my governor, because where they're doing that is in liberal states. And where they haven't done that, they've had better numbers. Sweden comes to mind, but let's look at the states. You know, the worst states are, you know, Massachusetts. Well, they were saying this too about healthcare. They were saying Massachusetts, this was during the SCOTUS hearing, they said Massachusetts, New York, and New Jersey represent 22% of the population, and they take 33% or 35% of the medical services. And Lindsey Graham was saying, you know, because of the way it's set up, I'd rather be set up a different way where the states can get, you know, certain block grants and spend it the way they want, and that would be great for my state. He kind of used it as a his opening SCOTUS and point of view, and he was talking about, then he couched it into Robert's decision and whatnot, but this was his opening to the SCOTUS. And, you know, he's fighting for his political life against Harrison, and Harrison's got $57 million given to him for this race in South Carolina. And I can tell you that South Carolina is not an expensive state. It's not a lot of, you know, things are cheaper there. So $57 million goes a longer way. The population's not even as great. It's not the most populated state, of course not. It's a growing state, though. But, you know, you take a look at that and you say, well, $57 million, that's the most any senator has ever received for a U.S. Senate seat. And Lindsey Graham's dealing with this guy named Harrison, and they gloss over these little phrases too, and they say, yeah, and there's money coming from outside. They don't say that like 98% of the money's coming from outside, and it's coming from, you know, California and elsewhere. You know, they don't tell you that it's coming from Jimmy Buffett or Bill Gates or whatever, you know. They don't tell you it's coming from George Soros-funded operations. Because George Soros, he understands the value of the court. And the Senate is the court. Because the Senate confirms the judges. And, you know, so far, George Soros funded operations have financed the DA's offices that have allowed the exploitation of the violence that we see in the street and just sends them right back out in the street. All kinds of bail reforms and all kinds of turning the other way and all kinds of revisions to what they'll pursue in terms of prosecution. And that's what George Soros has done. Civil unrest, civil disobedience, allowing people to wear masks and carry billy clubs and show up at rallies, show up at voting precincts, show up anywhere they want. And the mayors in these liberal establishments tell their police to stand down. The first time I ever saw that was with Freddie Gray in Baltimore, that incident where Stephanie Rollins Blake, the mayor of Baltimore at that time, said, we're going to give them space to destroy. Somehow they need to vent so they can just tear up our city. No, that's not even a good parenting technique. Okay? That's a horrible parenting technique, let alone, you know, have any kind of fairness to the equal taxpayers. And it's setting a bad example. But that's what Obama was all about. Obama Obama, you know, was all about redistribution of wealth. And we played a clip of the Obama on the horse. You know, that clip. We played that clip of Obama on the horse and handing the sandwich. And people loved it when I played that. You know, and I might even play it again here today. It's quite good. But basically what it was anytime you try to borrow from Peter to pay Paul, you could always depend on Paul's support. You could always depend on one group's support, and you're basically throwing a dagger into one group while advancing the wealth of another group at the other group's expense, and that's how you divide a nation. You divide it, you create civil unrest, you make it go broke, you weaken the military, and it is what we have right now. There was an underbelly of that during the Obama years. And, you know, it was just a situation where I'm actually going to find a couple of clips here. There was this really great clip. Well, they said there was a poll taken by Gallup said, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And 56% in that poll said, I'm better off now than I was 4 years ago. This is despite COVID, the scamdemic, the election infection that they're now winding down, where masks don't work, where you'll catch the virus more likely in your home than you will outside. That's according to the WHO. According to the CDC, masks aren't working as effectively as they thought. And, you know, it says it right on the box. And just because of the candle trick, where if you put a mask on, you can't blow a candle out, that does not mean that the virus can't come in and be trapped into your lung. So, but the issues about this is the way that we have been predicting it here on this show is that you're going to get this virus. And you watch, I said, you know, and Trump's been saying this. It's not even a secret, right? You listen to the rally that Trump had in Johnstown last night or Sanford, Florida the night before. Great rallies, great photos, great getting data, getting signups, getting a lot of people to engage in the campaign. He's been saying this is going to all end on November 4th, and what they're trying to do is tank the economy. We've been saying that because the unemployment rate is hitting the middle class the hardest, and the middle class, the restaurant owners, and the service workers are getting blown away by this. And what did Nancy Pelosi say on Wolf Blitzer? And we're going to play that clip. She said this. She said, Nancy Pelosi said, that all they want is all that Steve Mnuchin wants is to put out a stimulus check with Donald Trump's signature on it before the election. So she was more concerned about the politics of it than anything else. So, you know, that's pretty bizarre. Let's take a listen to. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll take a listen to all three. There's three clips on this Twitter. And then we're going to also... Jorge Masvidal has been stumping for Trump, and it's been great. There are a lot of clips here, but I got these three queued up. All right. Let's take a listen.
Evicted from their home. And as you know, there are Americans who are being evicted from their homes. They can't pay the rent. Many Americans are waiting in food lines for the first time in their lives. Can you look them in the eye, Madam Speaker, and explain why you don't want to accept the president's latest stimulus offer?
Well, because thank you very much, Wolf. And I hope you'll ask the same question of the Republicans about why they don't really want to meet the needs of the American people. But let me say to those people, because all of my colleagues, we represent these people. I have for over 30 years represented my constituents. I know what their needs are. I listen to them. And their needs are not addressed in the president's proposal. except ours. Our legislation is there to do three things primarily: to honor our workers, honor our heroes, our healthcare workers, our police and fire first responders, our teachers, our transportation.
She's going to honor the police? Tell me that isn't a lie, right?
Sanitation, food workers, the people who make our lives work. We couldn't be doing what we're doing without them. Many of them have risked their lives so that they to save lives, and now they will lose their jobs because
Mitch McConnell says the states
go bankrupt.
Excuse me for interrupting.
The states go bankrupt.
Madam Speaker, but they really need the money right now. And even members of
your own... I understand that, but
your,
if...
But even members
you
of your
me
own
a question,
caucus... Even members of your own caucus, Madam Speaker, want to accept this deal. $1.8 trillion, Congressman Ro Khanna, for example.
Let me just
quote Ro Khanna, a man you know well. I assume you admire him. He's a Democrat. And he just said this. He said, people in need can't wait until February. $1.8 trillion is significant and more than twice the Obama stimulus. Make a deal. Put the ball in McConnell court. So what do you say to Ro Khanna?
What I say to you is, I don't know why you're always an apologist, and many of your colleagues, apologists for the...
Oh, yeah, CNN's in the tank for the Republicans, right.
Republican position. Ro Khanna, that's nice. That isn't what we're going to do, and nobody's waiting till February.
All right, so we're going to take a listen to another part of that exchange.
Of a pandemic, that the symptoms... of a problem that the president refuses to address.
But you know,
and that is, the coronavirus.
We know,
that
we,
is
we
the
know
coronavirus.
The problem out there, but there are millions of Americans who have lost their jobs. They can't pay the rent. Their kids need the food.
That's right, and that's what we're trying to get done.
$1.8 trillion, the president just tweeted, stimulus, go big or go home. He wants even more right now. So why not work out
that's
a deal with him? And don't let the perfect, as they say here in Washington, be the enemy of the good.
Well, I will not let the wrong be the enemy of the right.
What's wrong with $1.8 trillion?
You know what? Do you have any idea what the difference is between the spending that they have in their bill and that we have in our bill? Do you realize that they have come back and said all these things for child tax credits and earned income tax credits or helping people who have lost their jobs are eliminated in their bill? Do you realize they pay no respect to the fact that child care is very important for people whose children cannot...
What she just talked about there, she's really talking about teachers unions and service unions like SEIU. That's what she's talking about. She's talking about also bailing out states and cities and city programs. That's what she's talking about. These cities that are going broke, that are run by radical lefties, Trump's not doing that. What Trump wants to do is bypass those municipalities' services and send the money directly to your bank account by a wire transfer or a debit card and give you the money that way. That's what he wants to do. And he wants to take government, the middleman, out of the distribution process.
Not go to school because they're doing remote learning, and yet they minimize the need for child care, which is the threshold with which people, mothers and fathers, can go to work if they have that. Do you have any idea of how
that's precisely why it's so important right now? Yesterday, I spoke to Andrew Yang, who says the same thing. It's not everything you want,
but you know
what? There's a lot there.
Honest to God, you really, I can't get over it because Andrew Yang, he's lovely. Ro Khanna, he's lovely. They are not negotiating this situation. They have no idea of the particulars. They have no idea of what the language is here. I didn't come over here to have... So you're the apologist for the Obama... Excuse me. God forbid.
Madam Speaker,
she's beside herself.
I'm asking serious questions because so many people are in desperate need right now. Let me ask you this.
Okay.
When was the last time... When was the last time you spoke with the president?
And I thank you for giving me the opportunity to say that to you in person.
All right. Madam Speaker, these are incredibly difficult times right now, and we'll leave it on that note. Thank you so much for joining us.
We'll leave it on the vote that you are not right on this, Wolf, and I hate to say that to you. But I feel confident about it, and I feel confident about my colleagues, and I feel confidence in my chairs.
And it's not about me. It's about millions of Americans who can't put food on the table, who can't pay the rent.
And we represent them. And we represent them. And we represent
these long food lines.
And we represent them.
I know you are.
We know them.
I'm just saying.
We represent them and we know them.
As we say.
We know them. We represent them.
Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, as they say.
It is nowhere near perfect.
Madam Speaker.
Always the case, but we're not even close to the good.
All right. Let's see what happens, because every day is critically, critically important. Thanks so much
for
joining us.
Thank you for your sensitivity to our constituents' needs.
I am sensitive to them, because I see them on the street begging for food, begging for money. Madam Speaker, thank you so much.
Have you fed them? We feed them. We feed them.
We'll continue this conversation down the road for sure.
Well, that got contentious. And, you know, you see how Nancy reacts when she gets like one tough question, right? One question that's halfway tough. And that's what, you know, that's what she did. We're going to take a listen to a positive message. Well, let's see. Now, there's a couple of things. There's a couple of things going on. All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and I think what we're going to do is pivot from that a little bit, pivot away from COVID and COVID stimulus and COVID relief. And we're also going to pivot away a little bit from the SCOTUS confirmation hearings with Amy Coney Barrett. There are some other things that are happening that are actually pretty important. And that is that we have a campaign that's going on. And, you know, there are some people that are suggesting that Biden's up in the poll in Texas or a lot of these battleground states. Don't believe the polls. You just look, open up your eyes. It was well said when somebody said that Trump is keeping all of the voters he had in 2016, and he's going to probably pick up a lot of people who voted for Hillary that have come around to actually believing Trump. But there's a lot of other things that are in play in terms of key battleground states. We touched on it yesterday, and that was that some of these Senate seats, a lot of people think that the Senate is going to go back. They're talking about court packing as if the Senate is a foregone conclusion that it's going to be run by Chuck Schumer and the Democrats, and that somehow Biden's going to beat Trump, you know, handily. Given the polls in a landslide. Now, I recall back when Mitt Romney was going against Obama in 2012. And, you know, one of the things I took with me was it seemed pretty obvious to me at around this time that what was happening is we were going to Mitt Romney was going to win in handily. That it wasn't even going to be close. That Obama's job performance in his first 4 years was just abysmal, and that he lied about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and Benghazi had just happened. And so I thought, no way is this even going to be close. And I was shocked, like there was no tomorrow. I was the most shocked I've ever been about the results. And Biden, Obama won very handily. So, you know, I thought that was interesting, right? And I think that that's what's happening to the Democrats this time around. They literally somehow, they hate Trump as much as we hated Obama. And they see somehow their candidate with momentum. I don't know how they can do that, though, because their candidates aren't answering any media questions. You know, Kamala Harris is hiding in an elevator. She's walking around campus and she's basically saying that she can't appear in person to the committee hearings, but yet she won't answer questions and she's surrounded by seven people. They all pack into an elevator as if no social distancing. And it's just absolutely crazy. So you just, you know, and then you watch Biden, he shows up at one tarmac and he says, I'll answer some questions to you in Florida. Goes to Florida, 10 people show up. He races off stage, doesn't answer any questions. And he lied to the American people. And now we have a letter from Hunter Biden that says there was meetings being set up and that Joe Biden was in on it. And we're going to get to that in just a bit. I don't know which callers are which here. Caller, you're on the air. Well, there's two callers. Caller, you're on the air.
Was that the eye?
What's that?
Is that me?
Yes. Who's calling?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Hey, morning, Scott.
Hi.
I need to speak to this Pelosi clip that you played. What she did is indicative of the entire left wing. That's what they do. That's how they act. They have this elitist entitlement that, how dare you question my actions and motives? Do you think that she's thinking in her head, gee, maybe I should, maybe change my mind or change what I'm doing? No, she's thinking in her head, you little son of I'm going to shut you down and anybody else that questions me. And that's where all this censorship and shutting down of free speech comes from, is these elitists that don't want to be questioned on their actions.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it. And it comes across so obvious, right? And not only that, but Kamala Harris, why do the media love the politicians that slam the door in their face and don't answer any of their questions and treat them like little children and put them in a rope like Hillary did, a rope barrier? And Trump comes out and answers every one of the questions entertainingly and factually and straightforward and candidly. And they somehow hate Trump. And I don't understand
they give the other ones a pass because they're on the same team.
Perhaps.
You've heard when Pelosi says, oh, that's, they ask her a question, she doesn't want to answer, and, oh, I'm not going to answer that.
Yeah.
Don't ask that question.
Yeah.
You think Trump or any Republican could get away with saying, oh, I'm not going to answer that?
No. Here's the thing, Republican supporters would not appreciate that from their candidate. Somehow Democrats, you could be Cal Cunningham and cheat on your wife with two different mistresses and somehow not get impacted in the polls. This is why I don't think that the polls are accurate, because the Cal Cunningham polls didn't shift that much in North Carolina, despite the fact that these two bombshell stories came out. And I'm just saying the polls are not accurate. It's almost as if, for example, that those polls were already baked and it didn't matter what happened. It didn't matter if the man shot somebody, was incarcerated, and in sitting in jail, the poll would still be the same. And so it almost is as if they're using a model that's not in touch with reality or what's happening on the ground. And whoever they're talking to isn't watching TV where something is happening. But it's obvious that the polls aren't reflective of negativity that's happening to the Democrats. That tells me that they're polling Kool-Aid drinkers on the left.
I drive around and I occasionally see a Biden-Harris sign, and I don't see any Trump signs. And I'm assuming that the people that don't have any sign are probably Trump supporters.
No, the thing is that I believe that there's a huge, huge amount of Trump voters out there. He got 63 million votes last time. Everybody that voted for Trump is going to vote for Trump again, and he's going to pick up Hillary voters, and he's going to also pick up more Bernie Sanders voters. His job performance is great, and 56% of the people from Gallup said that they're better off today than they were 4 years ago. And that's all you need to know. That and the poll he wins is the one where it says, who do you think your neighbors were voting for? And in that poll, Trump wins that poll. They think the neighbor thinks that their neighbors...
Let me ask you a question. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
let me ask you a question real quick. Do you think the fix is in? Because why all of a sudden is mainstream media sort of turning on the Democrat Party?
I have noticed
that. Did you notice that in the last couple days?
Yeah, I just played you the Wolf Blitzer, blitz.
That example.
Yeah, that's...
What's going on?
I don't know. You know what? I have a few theories on that, and I have been thinking about that, and I'm probably going to have more to say about that. I agree. I think that what's happening is You know, I actually don't have a good handle on that. I will tell you this. Like, they're telling more positive stories about COVID. I think that is to say that they're going to wrap up COVID as, you know, this is going to be a complete political hoax. And we're going to learn about that. Just like when Glory, after the Alabama Senate seat, and Roy Moore lost to Doug Jones in Alabama, and a Democrat won that Senate seat. They packed up the forged yearbook, and they took the bimbo that they were using to, you know, accuse Roy Moore of something that he couldn't disprove or prove, and neither could they. And they took up that little circus act, and it disappeared exactly after the debate. Nobody cared about the woman. Nobody cared about anything. Gloria Allred got paid for her services. She helped Doug Jones win a Senate seat. The Democrats will try to destroy your life. After Kavanaugh got confirmed, do you think that they followed up? No. Blasey Ford went back to flying fighter jets, you know, and surfing all over the world. And they've just packed that up and it was done. There was no more complaints, no more interest in it whatsoever. These are all political hit jobs. When are we ever going to learn about the boy who cried wolf and that these things are just a bunch of BS and hoaxes? When are we ever going to learn? You know, that we're being played. You know,
some of us have learned, but a lot of us haven't.
Right.
Well, let me get off the line so you can get to another call. Thanks for taking my call, Scott.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
All right. And, wow, we're running out of time. So who's calling in? Caller, you're on the air.
Thank you.
Oh,
I would
Bob.
Say this, just change the topic. I think, Scott, we need to consider they don't postmark first class letters anymore. With dates. I don't know if you're aware of that. So when people take their outside envelope down with their ballot inside, to be sure you ask to have a stamp hand canceled. And if you want, ask for a receipt for that stamp and have them stamp that too. You have evidence of it if you can afford $5.
All right, so what you're saying is this.
You can go
Bob.
Yes.
So what you're saying is that in a lot of states, they say your mail-in ballot must be postmarked. And if the post office doesn't postmark it, it gets thrown out.
Yeah. And if you've got $5 plus postage, you can get certified mail and get it to the post office and ask for a return receipt, which gives you evidence. And they know that somebody's concerned.
Yeah,
about
no,
I'm
sure.
Anyway,
I recommend.
Hey, thanks for letting me in. Scott.
Thank you. And you know what? Thank you, caller. And I recommend everybody just show up on election day and vote normal. Handwrite that doggone thing and submit it into the machine or how to push the right buttons. But please don't mail your ballot in. It's a mystery. What's going on there? I want to take a listen to Andrea Mitchell, what she said about Amy Coney Barrett. This is another positive news story to what the caller and I were talking about that's making Trump look good.
And that made her so relatable.
This is MSNBC.
This is a white mom with black children explaining the talk that black parents have had to communicate to their kids for generations, for centuries, if you will. And this is an interracial family, a multiracial family. It's something that is more and more present in America, something not conceived perhaps by some people in the Senate, but others. There are people on this panel who have black grandchildren and can relate to this. And it's just very accessible and touching to me. And I think that that makes her it's one of the reasons why she was considered to be a very appealing candidate.
Yeah, well, just to add to that, that Amy Coney Barrett's, so far, everything is going as perfectly as a confirmation process can go. It's unbelievable. And so we're going to have that ninth judge, justice. Now, take a listen to this. This is pretty funny, okay? This is a clip that was put out by Howie Carr on behalf of the bad day that Biden had and the great day that Trump had, but it's really funny. Let's take a listen.
Sleepy Joe Biden, he had a very bad day today. He forgot Mitt Romney's name.
The senator who was a Mormon, the governor, okay?
He didn't know what state he was in. And he said, Today he's a proud Democrat running for the U.S. Senate.
I'm running as a proud Democrat for the Senate.
Now Biden had a bad day.
Because you had a bad day. You take one down. You sing a sad song just to turn it around. You had a bad day.
There's a video right now of Trump dancing to YMCA. It's great stuff. All right. Got to get to one more serious piece of business here, too. And here it says here, Pembroke Pines, Florida, a small audience of 10 community leaders and two dozen members of the press await former Vice President Joe Biden. And the other part of that is that when they shows up, they got more Trump supporters, you know, in Biden's face than they do anything else. That's so Joe Biden is just one of these guys. Listen to what he's doing now with the court packing, and that another sidestep on this.
Only because you guys are fascinated. That's the court packing going on now.
But sir, wouldn't you say that your non-answer has become a bigger issue on the campaign?
No, only because you guys are fascinated with it, but no.
And now he's flip-flopping on that. He's saying, well, you know, I don't, you know, I'm not in love with court packing, but, you know, can't say what I would and can't say what I wouldn't do. You know, let's take a listen to Jorge Masvidal real quick. He gives, well, let's see, we don't have enough time for that. Jorge Masvidal is a UFC fighter, and he gives a great account of why it's important because, you know, he understands what happened in Cuba and Venezuela. All right, the New York Post has written up a story. It says, Biden's secret email. Smoking gun email reveals how Hunter Biden introduced Ukrainian businessman to VP dad. Hunter Biden introduced his father, then Vice President Joe Biden, to a top executive at Ukrainian energy firm less than a year before the elder Biden pressured government officials in Ukraine into firing a prosecutor who was investigating the company, according to emails obtained by the Post, New York Post. The never-before-revealed meeting is mentioned in a message of appreciation that Vadim Pazharsky, an advisor to the board of Burisma, allegedly sent Hunter Biden on April 17, 2015, about a year after Hunter Biden joined the Burisma board at a reported salary of up to $50,000 a month. That's just for him. But then combined, his firm and everything got, I think, close to $83,000. It says, Dear Hunter, thank you for inviting me to D.C. and giving an opportunity to meet your father and spend some time together. It's really an honor and pleasure. An earlier email from May 2014 also shows the Ukrainian, reportedly Burisma's number three exec, asking Hunter for advice on how you could use your influence on the company's behalf. So basically, these senior up, high up, really rich people were interested in writing Hunter, not because he was smart, not because he's a coke addict, not because he's a loser, but because of the influence. That's the word, influence. So the blockbuster correspondence, which flies in the face of Joe Biden's claims that he's never spoken to my son about his overseas business dealings, is contained in a massive trove of data recovered from a laptop computer. This is gonna be the October surprise, if you ask me. The computer was dropped off at a repair shop in Biden's home state of Delaware in April 2019, according to the store owner. Other material extracted from the computer includes a raunchy 12-minute video that appears to show Hunter, who's admitted struggling with addiction problems, smoking crack while engaged in a sex act with an unidentified woman. Oh, my God. That is just coming out today, folks. There's more to that, too, by the way. And then there's a story about Extortion 17, and how the SEAL team is related to the Iranian deal in terms of a payoff to make that Benghazi story go away. And they got retaliation through Extortion 17. They also engaged in the Iranian deal, but this was connected also with Benghazi. And there is more information to come about that. And President Trump has said, you're not going to believe your ears when you hear it. So we'll see what happens. Well, that brings us to the end of our show. My name is Scott Adams. We'll see you next time on the radio.